5, 4, 3, 2.
Well, hello there. How you doing?
Oh my God! I leave the children
for 10 minutes because it's my boy's birthday, and you burn the house down, metaphorically speaking. So, hey, we are back because obviously, you know, the talent is here. The talent has finally turned up. I've got a belly full of Chinese food and chocolate fudge cake, so I'm well happy now. I'm well happy.
No,
so,
you know, what did you do?
You know, so he's hopeless.
You told me to push the unmute button, and I kept doing it, and nothing was happening. It was, so I'm thinking that whole, you know, silence thing was like the longest awkward silence in history. We could definitely use this bit in our blooper show.
I brought up on my screen here, and it said the episode had ended. So I think you thought, he's not around, so we'll get away with a 15-minute episode. But
I even had this whole spiel worked out that I had, like, you know, notes on what I was going to say in your absence, and it was, like, smooth. It really was. I was kind of proud of myself as long as I didn't, like, panic.
Well, you can go for it. You go for it now. Just pretend I'm not here. So what was going on? We had Sarah on, who hopefully will ring back. So what did I miss? What have I missed?
Silence. Terrible, awkward silence. Do you want me to do
the old days?
Yeah.
Just like the old days.
It kind of was. So do you want me to read my spiel that I had? I had this whole
thing.
Yeah,
go on. You go for it. Yeah, go on.
All right. Here I am. I was going to say, good evening and welcome back to the Panic Room Radio Show, episode 112. See, that was good. That was good, right? I'm your host, Xtina, and I'm panicking just a little bit. And then I was going to laugh a little bit for you, see? And okay, I was going to say, normally this part of the show is done by James, my cohort here in the Panic Room, but tonight's his son's birthday, so happy birthday, August. So here I am, all by my lonesome, and not really sure what the hell I'm supposed to talk about. I mean, I listen in every week while James does this part, but am I really paying attention? I mean, did he tell me I should be writing this down? No. So here I am blathering about absolutely nothing and hoping nobody's, like, too bored or anything. And I hear you sighing, so I do think I'm boring you. And I was going to say that this is the part of the show where he asks me, you know, how my week was, and we talk about how quickly it's gone by. And what's new? So I wanted to say that I was excited because my third poetry book, Darkest Sunlight, will be released tomorrow, and I'm so freaking stoked about it. Both of my other two books I kind of consider grunge poetry, and if that's not really a thing, it is now. Both Dark Musings and Light Musings had little to no real editing, and just pretty much how I penned them was how they appeared in the books. But with my latest, Darkest and Light, I poured over each line trying to make sure it was the best that it could be. And I also had one of the wonderful cover artists at Hellbound draw me up a cover from an idea I had, and I couldn't be happier with it. I absolutely love the cover. My Facebook release party is tomorrow evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And if you won't tell anybody, you can go to Amazon right now and one-click Darkest Sunlight. Yeah, that was a secret. I wasn't even done yet. I was going to say that every week I get my political news from James, and if you do too, I apologize because I've got nothing. Wait, I do have something. That Stormy Daniels thing where she said the trumpeter's penis looks like a mushroom, that's all I have. So there, that's something,
right?
She actually said
it looks like a mushroom character from Super Mario, which kind of destroyed my childhood pretty much. It's funny. You can imagine Trump having one of those little shriveled up, stumpy old man acorn dicks, can't you? It's So
I can.
That's in your head now. But hey. So anyway, now we're back on track. Obviously, as I say, the talent has arrived. So panic. I hope our listener is still listening. To be honest with you, because I don't know how else he would listen.
I think you booby trapped. I'm pretty sure you booby trapped a button. That's what you did.
No, I wouldn't dream of. No, I did nothing. You did it. It's all on you, that one. Obviously, you cannot be trusted. You cannot be trusted,
no.
So, you know, it's just sad. But, hey, we have, I'm going to bring Sarah on because you know, she's very patient
with
you.
Actually, you got to introduce her correctly. It is, and I've actually read her book, Jane. She's got a few more, but I've read Jane, and she's transgressive fiction author Raya Ann Pulcastro. Do we have the
Yeah, so,
hey.
Oh, yeah, that lady that Christina just said. Hello.
Raya. Wow, that's quite an intro.
Hi. How are you doing? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the proper part of the show, the properly done part of the show with somebody who knows what he's doing, obviously, you know. So apologies for that. Honestly, you cannot get the staff. You really can't. You can't, and I couldn't. She's hopeless.
I know, it was awful. I would start reading the spiel, and then you know, I was getting messages saying we hear nothing. So then I'd go back to the studio, and I'd push the button again, and I'd start talking again, and nothing. So it was awful. It really was. And I still don't know what the hell I was doing wrong.
You don't know what the hell you were doing. I think that's the appropriate
there's
phrase.
There's that
here,
one
so.
Too. Yeah,
there's
that
there
one.
There is
too.
That. So hey, look, I'm gonna leave you two ladies to blather a bit, because I still got things to do at this end. So I will let you just carry on. Just don't let her touch anything. Don't let Christina touch anything. Just keep her talking. Don't let her touch anything.
Hands in your lap.
Okay, just don't. Yeah, could you just keep an eye on her for me, and I'll be back in about 10 minutes. So off you go.
Okay, so I know that was awful, but I have to say that now that we got that out of the way, I think all nerves are totally out the window. Like, it's totally fine now. You know, we got exactly. We got the craziness out, so we're good now. We're totally good. So. I'm excited that you are here to talk to us about your book, Jane, because I remember reading this, and I'm just so fascinated by, like, mental, psychiatric disorders, I suppose, because, like, my kid's dad, he was schizophrenic, and it is quite scary what the mind can make you think, you know, what's real and stuff. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about Jane.
Well, it is basically, I guess, just a delving into what it would be like to go crazy kind of on purpose. Everyone around you is crazy, so why not? It's fun, right? You can do whatever you want. But then it kind of goes a little too far and becomes a real thing and a little out of control. And yeah.
Yeah, you know,
so
this was like a good, I want to say 2 years ago that I read it. And I do remember talking to a friend of mine. I would read a little bit, and I'd talk to my friend, and I would tell him, like, I'm starting to feel a little bit crazy, you know, being in the head. I seriously was. The ants, I think, made me feel just a little crazier. I really think that, you know, because I don't know, there were just some things that she would do that I would just step back and go, wow, that is, it's pretty freaky. But, you know, it being, you know, that I've, you know, dealt with, you know, my kid's dad is schizophrenic, and there were just some really hairy moments, you know, throughout his sickness. And I tell this story, which is just kind of embarrassing for him, I guess, but he's not listening, so that's fine.
Okay.
But there was, like, seriously, there was, he was, like, really, really sick. And like in and out of the psych hospitals, like all the time. And it was one of the times when he had just come home and he was still just not quite right. Like sometimes they'd send him home And as soon as he walked in the door, we'd all be like, oh, God, it's, you know, it's too soon, you know. And
yeah.
he is,
yeah.
he's, like, passed out in his recliner. And he bolts upright, and he looks directly at our son, and he says, where am I? And my son does not even miss a beat. He looks right at him, and he says, who are you? And I'm like, the rest of us, I know. How mean is that? That's mean, isn't it? But it was
a little,
so,
but you know.
But it was hilarious. Like, we could not stop laughing. We were, like, dying. That was, like, great. And, you know, it's a great story to tell people, even though, you know, he doesn't think it's so great. But, yeah, that was awesome, though. But it is really scary, you know, what the mind can make us think. I mean, I think all the time to myself, you know, what if I had some kind of psychiatric disorder? And, you know, and have you ever been to the doctor when they actually ask you that question and they say, you know, have you ever seen or heard something that wasn't actually there? Well, my question always is, how do you know it's not really there if you're seeing it? I mean, that's, I guess, you know, what I would
right?
want to know for the people that have, you know, any kind of disorder. Like, how, you know, how do they know whatever it is isn't really there? It's it's quite scary. And now with you, because I did read your bio, and it talks about, you know, that you're fascinated by the psychiatric disorders as well and stuff. And did you do a bunch of research into it before writing about it?
I didn't do, like, very professional technical research, but I worked for disability services for quite a few years, 5 years. So I had a lot of psychiatric clients. I heard a lot of stories, some of them interesting, some of them scary. I didn't include any of those, you know, in the book, but it just kind of lent just this idea to me that maybe psychosis isn't really what we think it is, and maybe there's more to it. Maybe the way we treat it makes it worse sometimes. And that just kind of gave me the ideas behind the book. Did a little, you know, a little psychology in college, the same as everybody else, but no like in-depth research or anything.
Really? Because I have to say, from just from reading it and the thoughts that were going on in, you know, even just Jane's head, it really sounded like you had firsthand knowledge. No, that's a compliment, but I was definitely thinking, wow, I wonder, you know, I mean, because that would be super cool to, you know, to actually have a schizophrenic person, like a true schizophrenic
right.
write, just their diary or something would be just...
Yeah.
So
yeah,
fascinating and scary. Like, I guess parts of it reminded me, did you ever read The Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx?
I didn't, know.
There are, see, and I'm not even a huge, and I never was a huge, like, Motley Crue fan. I really wasn't, but the book's cover called to me, and I picked it up, and I started reading it, and a lot of it was, I mean, claims to be, who knows actually how, you know, how real this stuff is, but, you know, to be when he was really, really sick and strung out on heroin, and he would write down his thoughts, and it even said that he was writing them down because he didn't know if he would last till the next day. And
wow.
some of the thoughts and, you know, the things that were going on, it reminded me a lot of Jane, because it was just so... It was scary, but it was scary in a, I don't know, in a way that was, you couldn't stop looking. You had to keep going and find out what was going to happen. And, I don't know, it's just truly fascinating and scary. So I would, you know, damn, it scares me so bad to think what the mind can make you think, you know? So, do you have a reading for us?
I do.
Yay. So, if you're ready, I'm ready to hear more. And, of course, you know, I read the book, but I really did. I loved it. And do you remember, I actually have a signed copy of your book. Did you know that? I don't know if you remember, like, you know.
I don't know. did I mail you one?
You did. Well, who else was going to do it? It says, Xtina, Hope Jane meets all of your expectations and then some, Ryan Ann.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got it in my hand right now. It's great. It's so thick.
That's awesome.
Too. You're right. It's a pretty decent sized book. It really is.
Yeah. And it really, like, when we talk about the research, I don't know if it was a combination of drugs and alcohol, but I just found a way to get to a very dark place and just let it pour out. So I feel like kind of as writers, we're more of like a conduit for a story that already exists out there, and we're not really telling it. We're just kind of, it's just passing through us.
You know, I could not agree with you more. I really couldn't, because there are certain stories that I, you know, come up with, or even I write poetry, and there mm-hmm. are certain, when I look back on some of the things that I've written, there are times that I cannot tell you where that thought came from, or I'll even think to myself, wow, I don't even talk like that, so where did that come from? It didn't come from me. You know, I am pretty sure mm-hmm. of that, so I totally agree with you that, It's kind of like just floating out there, and, you know, we kind of have to, like, grab onto it or something. So it's definitely a cool thought. Like, I was just thinking, who was I talking to? That song, Sympathy for the Devil. Like, didn't they say that, I don't know, the story goes that, you know, they passed out, and when they woke up, that song was, like, basically written. To me, that is creepy mm-hmm. as hell, you know?
Yeah.
But it's awesome. So, okay, I just keep getting sidetracked because I'm excited that you're here, and, you know,
I'm excited to be here. So this is basically, it's afterword from Jane that is kind of like a bridge between Jane and Dentata, which I hope to have coming out in the next couple months. I want to spend a little bit more time on it than I originally planned, so I'd hope to already have it out by now, but it's going to be a little bit longer. If you were to buy the Kindle version of Jane right now, it would not have this afterword in it, because I had this weird feeling that I should take it out, and now I regret that. I'm going to put it back. But so anyways, that's what I'm reading for you guys, and I apologize if I cough or sneeze or anything. I guess I decided to have some allergies this year, and it's been a little rough.
Go for it. I mean, after that beginning, you know, 15 minutes of crazy awkward silence, we can do no wrong anymore. We can't. It's good.
All right. No, I'm just going to go for it. And again, I apologize, since this is written word, sometimes it's going to be a little hard to tell who's talking. There's quite a bit of dialogue here in the beginning. All right.
Okay.
Can you tell I'm nervous?
A little bit. We're good, though. We are.
All right. 1 in 6. I don't know, Angela shakes her head and looks up at the baby blue sky as if the answer is out there, up there, somewhere. Obviously, she's lost her goddamn mind. She's fucking crazy, just like Rose. Fucking crazy, okay? I mean, who does that? If she just would have stayed where she was. All of a sudden, Elizabeth looks up at her. Something between fear and shock comes screaming from her green eyes and stops Angela mid-sentence. So you would rather he... What? No! Angela screws up her face. Well... Elizabeth looks back down at the grass, focuses on it, tries to keep the world around her from spinning. 1 in 6. I could have handled it myself without. Elizabeth squeezes her eyes shut and shakes her head. Don't say it. Such an ugly word. An ugly word that somehow does not fit here. When the perpetrator is a victim, well, there's no victim to begin with. And when there's no victim, there's no crime. There's no... I'm sorry. She looks back up at Angela. It's just that... But she trails off, shocked that the thoughts in her head are her own. What? She sighs. Don't you think he deserved it? Well, fuck, of course he did, Angela booms, loud enough to silence the playground. Around them, mothers turn to stare, frown, and otherwise show their disapproval. B bobs his head out of a plastic tunnel where he's been playing on his own since they arrived. It's okay, baby. Mama's okay. Go back to playing. She ignores the other mothers but lowers her voice. Of course he deserved it, but that doesn't make it right. And it don't mean I should have been a part of it. Doesn't it make you feel... vindicated? Angela stares at her friend, searching for eye contact, but Elizabeth doesn't look up from the ground. Hey, she calls. Hey, look at me, obliges, and her eyes glisten like she's fighting back tears. I have horrible nightmares, still. Horrible, horrible nightmares, and they're so real. So real, I relive that shit every night, every fucking night, she explains. Do I deserve that shit? I have nightmares too, Elizabeth thinks. every night and every day, every moment. All of a sudden, Angel asks, "Are you okay?" There are tears streaming down Elizabeth's face. She doesn't know it until she wipes her eyes and pulls back her hand, salty and wet. "Yeah, yeah," she stutters. I've got to go." She stands to leave, but her knees give out, and she falls back to the grass, her white stockings stained, her face buried further in her hands. "Oh, my God, Beth, what's wrong?" Her tears flow free, and her body heaves. "Beth, Beth." She shakes her head and scrunches her face, but the tears won't stop. "Beth, are you okay?" Finally, she whimpers. "I just need to go home." The next 10 minutes are a blur. Angela helps her to her car while Bea struggles to carry Beth's oversized purse. Vague and far away, she sees Angela slide into the driver's seat. She hears her complain, "Damn, it's a stick." She listens to the gears grind and sees the street slip by in a trail of muted colors. Then she's home, Angela sliding her into bed, and everything goes dark. But sleep is not a better state. He visits her again, reminds her, violates her all over. 1 in 6. She screams, 1 in motherfucking 6. From the bottom of her tortured soul, from the depths of her nightmare, she screams until she wakes alone once more, alone and scared, but she's tired of being scared, sick and tired of it. She thinks of Angela, how determined she is that she would never, that she would better defended herself that night if Jane had not come around the alley corner with a lead pipe in one hand and a pink strap on in the other. How no matter what, Angela refused to be the 1 in 6. She thinks of Jane and how her rage boils and seethes, how she refused to let an evil piece of shit off that easy. Angela is wrong, after all. Jane is not crazy. Elizabeth may have thought so, too, before when her friend took off for a week without telling anyone and came back looking and smelling like a hobo. But now that she knows the girl's secret, now that she knows what Jane is truly capable of, she doubts insanity has anything to do with it. No, what Jane suffers from is anger, ire, fury over what's wrong in the world. Wrath for justice. No, it isn't bipolar that torments her. It is the evil that men do. 1 in 6. No one would have ever thought to look up to Jane, to make her a role model, a mentor, least of all Elizabeth, until now, until something snaps and bangs and explodes together inside of her, until she finds herself wanting, needing that rage, until she finds herself refusing to live in fear, refusing to cry another tear, letting the blood in her veins boil with vengeance instead. Ruthless, merciless, hungry for retribution, ready to sink her teeth into some proper eye-for-an-eye revenge. Revenge for herself, revenge for the 1 in 6.
The end. I love that. Yes. You know, the funny thing is that even with you reading it, I still felt that little bit of, I don't know what to call it, kind of like panic, you know, just because it seems like the thoughts are just, yeah, I don't know. That's great. It is. I really enjoyed the book. Although I have to say, it disturbed me. It did. It really did. It every time I would put it down, and I would go to talk about it, I'm like, I feel like I'm going just a little bit crazy, a little schizophrenic, you know, in a good way. But it was great. It was.
Good. I'm glad. And I can say that's a pretty common thing I've heard from people. I think maybe those word salads and a lot of that, you know, just kind of craziness is in there. It just, and that was kind of my goal, is like, if I can make somebody throw up, then I've done my job.
Wow. Yeah, I never actually experienced that, but I wouldn't say paranoia, that's not really the right word, but definitely it's a panicked feeling. It's a, you know, where you, I've never actually had a panic attack or anything, but what I imagine, you know, it do kind of feel like, that's definitely what the emotion that I had while you know, when I got really immersed in the book was just
nice.
Yeah, it's great. It was. So tell us about the book you're working on right now. You said it's connected to Jane.
Yeah, so Dentata is going to take off where Jane left off. It's different style, so I'm writing a web versus kind of a series. So my first book, Suicide in Tiny Increments, in the timeline wise, it happens second, Jane happens first, and then Dentata kind of overlaps the ending of both the other books. All the books are written in different styles, and so Dentata is a bit of a challenge because I've written it in second person. So I'm not sure how that's going to sit with readers. I hope that it's going to. I really wanted people to feel it, and I think in second person, that was the best way that I could really make people personally relate to what was happening.
Yeah.
But it remains to be seen.
I have only read one book before that was written in second person, and it was Caroline Kepnes did a book called You. And they actually just turned it into a series on Lifetime, I think it is. But
okay.
I had never read, you know, a second person before, and it's definitely interesting. I have to say, it really was. You know, it takes a little while to kind of warm up to it and tend to, you know, kind of figure out exactly, you know, what we're supposed to, which is weird because the book You is about a stalker. He's and we're in, well, we're not really in his head. He's telling us, you know, the story basically, or he's talking to one of the characters, but he's a stalker. So, you know, it's like but he doesn't think he's crazy. But, you know, us, the reader, is, you know, reading it, and we're just thinking, oh, my gosh, dude, you are fucked up. But, you know, he doesn't think he is, which kind of is a little humorous at times, you know. So it's great. So I can't wait to read it. That the first book, what was it called?
Suicide in Tiny Increments?
Yes, that is a great title, by the way. It is. And is it written totally different than Jane and the book you're working on now? Yeah, so they're different.
It's more of like a tragic comedy, pretty different, I guess, yeah. Written in regular third person, not, you know, not like Jane where it skips around a lot. It's just one narrator the whole time, pretty straightforward.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny. It's slapstick kind of funny. I had this great fantasy that Louis C.K. would play, you know, Daniel Long, that's the main character in the movie, but he thought he should whip his dick out in hotel rooms and, like, totally ruined my plans.
that's too cool, though. That is. I can't wait for it to come out, and I will definitely be one-clicking. And you said it'll be a couple of months still?
I'm thinking it's probably going to be a couple of months. I'm going to try to get some arcs ready and get those out ahead of time. So we should talk later, and maybe I can get you a copy, you know, before.
Definitely, definitely. We'll have to schedule you to come back, and hopefully we don't have that crazy, you know. I'm just going to play it off now, and I'm going to say that we were just working on our blooper show. You know, that's what
okay.
I say anytime. Anytime I mess up, because, you know, I can't even say James does it right. Well, you know what? I can't even. Yes, he does. He pushes the wrong button all the time. I just obviously didn't push any buttons. So.
Oh, no.
I know. It was a lot of fun. And we both had, you know, nerves. But, you know, then when we had to go through that craziness, I think it got rid of all of them. So the next time we have you on the show, we will be, you know, we'll be good. We'll be great at this. And we can just sit back with our drinks and... Yeah, and didn't you say you have to go? You have to go into work now. Is that what?
Yeah,
Oh.
I was supposed to. I was able to cover a few hours of my shift, so that's how I'm here right now. I would normally be at work, so yeah. No drinking before bartending. They kind of frown on that in Oregon.
Well, see, and you always see in the movies they're drinking during the bartending. So
oh,
is that frowned upon too? Or is that?
Like California, Nevada, plenty of states, it's perfectly legal for the bartender to drink. It's just like, you know, I live in one of those strict states. So I got to be sober.
Damn it. That sucks. Yeah, I mean, it terribly sucks when you're, you know, round up into people who are drinking and you can't. Definitely. I hate that we are just about out of time for our first segment. It went by too fast, probably because we had crazy, you know, silence in there for a while. And I apologize, I do. That was so awful. But you have to promise to come back and see us.
Yes, this was so much fun.
Okay, and where can we find you online?
RiaAnnPolcastro.com. I feel like I should maybe spell that for people. So RiaAnnPolcastro. So there's a .com, and then all my stuff on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the whole, you know, general digital world.
Right, and I will get your links put up on our Facebook page, so if anybody wants to stalk Rye, they can go there and do that. And by Jane, it was great. It made me feel a little crazy, but, you know, shouldn't we all feel a little crazy from time to time? I think that's a good thing. So, again, like, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we're going to have to do it again real soon, okay?
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. Near the village, the peaceful village, the lion sleeps tonight. Near the village, the quiet village, the lion sleeps tonight.
Which I think should be more successful than part one, because I'm here now. So, you know, never get a woman to do a man's work. That's what my grandmother always used to say. And I think in many ways, he was quite right. So there you go. Well, I think he's still underlined the point there, which was good. But it was, you know, we gave you a go. So, well, obviously, you know, in today's day and age, you know, you should get a medal for trying. They do that. The culture, and it was getting bad in England, but here this whole, give the fat kid a certificate because he finished. You know, it was 2 hours after everybody. I was saying, well, everyone's a winner. To be fair, no, the kid who came in first, he's the winner, not Fatty, who's still running after everybody's gone home. No, I'm sorry, but no.
The kids aren't even allowed to play, like, dodgeball anymore because it's too violent. I freaking loved dodgeball. I did.
Oh, you know, seriously?
You've never lived until you get one of those balls upside, like, your face or something. You've
not
lived.
Oh, you get one of those in the face. God, yeah.
In England, they were
doing a whole combat to stop kids climbing trees. And there's a great, I don't know if you play it here, a game, we play it with horse chestnuts about this time of year called Conkers. And you get a horse chestnut and drill a hole in it, put some string through it, and your mate does the same. And then literally, you crack at each other's conkers, these horse chestnuts, and until one of them breaks.
God.
And that was Conkers. And they were back. We used to play that in school, the recess used to, and that's what you did. But now, we can't play that because kids are getting hit on the fingers. Well, tough fucking shit, you know.
Oh, poor
so
kid.
Little Johnny gets wrapped on the knuckle with a horse chestnut. Oh, diddums. You know, no wonder kids these days are so soft and entitled.
Yes.
Soft.
Yep,
that's what
definitely.
They are. They're soft.
Yep.
And it's funny, well, with the exception of my kids, seriously. I mean, I've had them climbing trees, you know, from a very early age. My daughter climbs trees in our backyard. Now, my son's a bit big actually for that now, but
tree climbing for him. Yeah.
But she's figured out there's a tree she can climb, and you know, she needs to go a little bit more. She'll be able to get on the roof. From the tree. So she's been running on the roof at some point.
I remember hanging out in trees. I remember we had these friends, and I would go to their house, and that's what we would do. We would play up in the trees, and the kids don't even go outside anymore. They seriously don't go outside anymore. I remember saying that to my son, you know, go outside and play. Go outside and do what? Go outside and play. Just go outside. Yeah. I mean, but no, they're never outside. So,
that was us. I mean, certainly in the summer, it was just get out and play. We didn't hang out. Even if it's raining, I suppose we'd be in. But we had a big sort of play shed in our backyard. So we just used to go and play in that. We didn't want to be stuck in the house. But
no,
on a nice day, we would just go. We'd go up the lanes, or we'd just go hang out and... We'd be gone under the rule what you get as soon as you're home when the streetlights come on. And that you'd be gone all day. No cell phones, no mummies texting you, where are you, mate? Make sure you've got your mittens. You know, make sure you've eaten something. If we were hungry, we'd go shop with something, you know. I mean we'd forage. We would forage.
Yeah.
But nobody starved to death. Nobody got abducted by murderers. I mean, that's what we did. But these days,
my dad, I would go out in the morning, and my dad would lock me out of the house. So I mean, I couldn't go back.
Well,
maybe that's
different. Maybe that's because he hated you. To be honest, a little bit different.
On,
I mean,
I am wonderful.
The next step is, you know, you go out to play and you come home and you find they've moved. You know, that's the next stage, isn't it? You know.
Come on now, I am wonderful. And you know what? I had so much that I was going to talk about baseball for like a good, I don't know, minute or so, because you were not there to stop me. You couldn't have muted me. I was so excited about talking about baseball, and I blew it. So,
you did.
I totally blew
you
it.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Shame. Shame on you. So, I apologize to the listener for leaving Xtina in charge. Won't happen again. I do assure you, will not happen again. What I may do next time I can't make it, I'll get my daughter's ferret to stand in because I think the ferret might do a better job, to be honest.
Oh, I had it. You know, and if anybody
could
have heard me,
to press the button.
I was doing good. I was doing good. Nobody could hear me, but I say I was doing fabulous. I was.
Well, you watch, when I'm cobbling this mess together in post-production, I will be a judge of that.
Yeah.
I'll be the judge of that,
You know what? Mm. I can't even blame it on drinking. I have not had a drop to drink. Actually, I probably should tell people I'm drinking, and that's why. Right. I should have blamed it on the booze.
Yeah.
No, you don't think that would work? No. Oh, so don't we normally, like, you know, review something or, you know...
I was going to do... I'm just wondering what button to press. Just, again, you don't understand all the buttons. I think that's the thing. Let's do that. Here we go.
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
okay, so one of... I tell you what, I've got a review, because I did mention it last week, because I hadn't seen it last week. The new series of American Horror Story started last Wednesday, and I actually caught the first episode at the weekend. And it's off to a good start, I have to say.
It's already looking
better than the last two seasons, I must admit.
You know, I have not watched it in a couple of seasons now, but I've seen a couple of people post that they're not too impressed with it. But you are, so I definitely value your opinion.
Well, I watched it with my daughter, and she actually is the first, because she wanted to see it, and I thought, okay, fine. And she enjoyed it as well. It's looking good. I mean, you know, early days. I mean, obviously it was only the second one yesterday, which I haven't seen yet. But, you know, I'm sorry, I got a belly full of Chinese food and chocolate cake, so I'm ready for bed, actually, to be honest. but it's got Evan in it and you know, the crew. I think Emma Roberts is in it this season. Not sure about Gaga. I'm not sure if she's in it, but I think a lot of the old crew's in it. I think Sarah Paulson's in it, obviously. So, so a good start, you know. Early days, but off to a good start. Better than the last two seasons, anyway. So, what about you? What have you been watching, Xtina?
I just finished the series or whatever short thing, the 11/22/63. I just finished that a couple nights ago.
Oh, the Stephen King thing. Yeah, what did you think to that?
I really enjoyed it. I did, and you know, you had said that, you know, you liked it, but it was, didn't you say it was depressing? It was like, you know, you said that the ending was depressing. And
I agree.
I expected to be like, okay, because whenever you say something, I just expect it to be like, oh my God, that was like, I'm going to go kill myself now. You know, that's because, you know, because I'm trying to prepare myself, you know. So I think that I was preparing myself too much because I was just like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? But I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go walk into, you know, heavy traffic. So, no, I liked it. I really liked it. And I would, you know, I guess I would give it like 4.5, you know, Xtina stars is, you know, what I would give it.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those... Again, I don't know, the book, I love the book, and it's one of those where the ending was really the only ending it could have, but it went through all that for, the ending was a bit of a letdown for me, to be honest.
I know.
I'm not going to spoil it, but again, as I've said before with Stephen King, there's been a few books where the ending's been a bit, but getting to the end, the ending was whatever. But getting to it, you know, the backstory, I would recommend you read the book to the 26/11/63. Because it's more involved. There's actually more backwards and forwards thing.
For various subplots
and that. And it is. I think had they put in as much repetition in the TV show as the book, people would have got bored very quickly. But I think the adaptation was very good. It's not about the ending for me. It's the getting there was brilliant, beautifully written. And I mean, I'm a big James Franco fan. I must admit. And anybody who has HBO, I believe, you see the HBO stars, The Deuce, that just started its second season with, I'm not sure Franco's in it this second season because he had a bit of a bit caught up in the Me Too movement, but Maggie Gyllenhaal's in it, and I'm a big fan of Maggie. She's just probably my ideal woman, I have to say. Probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, anybody who's seen her in The Secretary will know exactly what I mean. She's fantastic. But yeah, again, the first season, it was actually based, it's set in the 70s, so brilliant soundtrack, based in around the rise of the porn industry in New York in the 70s, and brilliant. I would recommend it. Fantastic. And so season two, I'm not seeing the first one yet, but looking forward to that one. Looking forward to that one. So yeah, we've actually done stuff. So I presume we have sort of a guest, and I've got a blank screen in front of me because you screwed up.
Oh.
So you're gonna have to tell the listener who's coming on next.
Okay, next we have a returning guest, horror author Russell R. James.
Russell, are you there, sir?
Very good. How are you tonight?
I'm good. You know, I bet you're really pleased you're on in the second half. You know, with
whatever.
With a man in charge.
Ouch. Well, you know, we don't call the panic room for nothing. That was going to be my whole joke, you know, lead in about how I was panicking. And, you know, then I had people messaging going, I can't hear anything. So, of course, I was panicking a little more. And
There you go. You think the show actually living up to its name, which is fantastic.
Exactly.
Which is fantastic. So, I'm sorry to say, it's my son's 16th birthday today, and we've been out for Chinese food and eating tons of cake, and feeling a bit nauseous, to be honest. I've had a lot of chocolate fudge cake on top of the thing. It's a Chinese buffet, and it's like all you can eat, which for me is a challenge, to be honest.
Absolutely.
How many plates can you fill and empty in an hour? And I'll tell you something. As you know, and I'm that childish, I deliberately starved myself today. I've eaten very, very little.
Does that
work? I was empty.
I didn't think that worked. Yeah.
Oh, it does. Yeah, I've absolutely made a complete pig of myself. The waiting staff were walking by. The waiting staff were judging me, I could tell. They were walking by just looking at me like, he's got another plate. He's got another plate. They were judging me.
You know, I don't think that, you know, going out to a Chinese, especially the last few times that I've gone with my son, we just don't, they charge way too much for the, you know, plate and a half that we get each. So it's just ridiculous to go. It is,
They don't charge too much. You eat too little. You're looking at it completely the wrong way.
Exactly. Yeah. So. You need to eat. I said, Russell, hit the nail on the head, mate. Yes, you need to eat more. That's the key. Get your. I mean, it's a Yorkshire thing for me. You know, you get your money's worth. You know, it's just damn well paid for it. To be fair, that's why I very, very rare. I've never walked out of a movie, no matter how shit they are, because I've paid for it. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch it till end because I pay for it. Same with, you know, same with a meal. I always finish a meal, always finish a book, with the odd exception, and rice. I'm talking to you. You know, because I've bloody well paid for it, I'm going to finish this. You know, as a consequence, I've seen and read some absolute crap, I have to say.
Yep. Yeah,
I'm
you know,
dare
I
you
used
to read
to...
50 Shades of Grey then, because then see if you can finish that.
I did. I bought it and I read it and it was painful. But I finished. I was going to buy all three because I thought, you know, it's a bestseller. Let's see what a bestseller.
Yeah.
I did the same with Harry Potter, you know, and I. But it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. I haven't even watched the film yet, I don't think I ever will, to be honest.
You know,
with you,
wait.
I
read the books, and I'm not gonna say they were, you know, I can't even say I enjoyed them. I think I read them just going, I don't get it. And not only that, but I knew that it was fan fiction from the Twilight, So I'm thinking the whole time it's about vampires, and it took me about halfway into the book before I realized there were no vampires, but I kept going. Because it was simple to read, because it felt like it was written by like a 15-year-old. So it was simple.
It was written at an eighth grade level at the
best. Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, although I was going to say Donald Trump could have understood it, but no, probably not.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I wouldn't go there. Anyway, the movies though, to be honest, I just watched the first one, but I liked it because the chick who played Anastasia, Dakota, was that her name? Dakota?
Dakota Fanning, yeah?
Yes.
Dakota Johnson.
Melanie Griffith's daughter. She did a good job. She brought almost a comedic role to the character, which you didn't really get in the books because, you know, they were
ridiculous.
Oh,
she was a complete wet blanket in the book.
Yeah. So in the movie, she brings this little comedic thing going on, and it was actually good. There were parts that I laughed out loud, and I thought this is actually the only two times in my life that I've ever watched a movie that I thought was better than the book, and that was one of them. It might be worth laughing.
To be fair, not difficult, to be honest with you. It wouldn't be too difficult to be better than
That's
that
true.
Book.
That's true. I did kind of enjoy it. I mean, I wouldn't watch it again, but
Do you know me either? I wouldn't watch it at all.
at all. Yeah.
So Russell is here, and I'm just reading ahead here. The book, The Curse of the Viper King, sounds a brilliant title. Love that. And the tagline is awesome: Indiana Jones meets Anaconda. In this throwback to the days of Saturday matinee B movie. That's three things you've got me on there. Indiana Jones. Yes. And I only recently just watched again the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which everybody slated, but I did actually enjoy it. Anaconda. What a brilliant film Anaconda was. And I remember the Saturday B movies. In fact, when I was a kid, I mean, all the sort of B movies from the 50s, I guess, 50s and 60s, they used to play them on a Saturday morning on the
Absolutely.
TV after Champion the Wonder Horse and a couple of cartoons, Laurel and Hardy usually. But they were great. They were fantastic. They were action-packed. They were cheesy. They were brilliant.
And that's what this is. This is the third of a series with the same main character, Grant Coleman, and he's a paleontologist who keeps getting recruited to these crazy adventures where they're dinosaurs or giant bats, or we've got giant spiders in this one. And
Yay!
It's really meant to just be fun, you know, to go out and have a good adventure.
Fantastic.
When someone says, "Wow, this reads like a B movie," I say, "Great, that you got it. Perfect. This is what this is.
Yeah.
Just a good time."
They were great because they were just innocent. They didn't have any hidden messages. They were just, like you say, they were just full on action from start to finish. And I love
that.
That's
right.
There's
good guys. There's bad monsters. And even in these are PG-13. I've left the language and the sex out of here. I mean, there's some monster eating people violence kind of things, which, you know, I think's family fun. But and so I can direct people. Like this weekend I'm doing the MegaCon in Tampa Bay, and I've got book signings and sellings all weekend. And I have people who come in, and a young kid will come in and want to buy one of the books, and the parents will be, okay, and I'll have to say, no, not that one. I can direct you to these ones, and they're going to be great. I mean, they're not written for kids, but there isn't anything, you know, that you're going to look at and say, gee, that guy was a jerk for selling my kid this zombie book, because it's pretty harrowing.
Well, do you know, I mean, you have to, I mean, look at what kids will watch these days. You know, I mean, that was my own kids. You know, my daughter is a big horror movie. I mean, she loved It. You know, she loves. We've seen Hereditary, which brilliant. I highly recommend it. And like you say, I mean, I could sit and watch it with her. It wasn't there wasn't, you know, loads of sex and that in it. It was a lot of good jump scares. A lot of, you know, kids like mm-hmm. that. Kids love, you know, back to, you know, going boom to them. You know, kids love that stuff. And it's
absolutely
great that, you know, you're not loading it. It's funny, I mentioned this before, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up watching the Hammer Horror films as a kid. I used to stay up late on a Saturday
uh-huh.
night watching. And it was funny because my parents said they'd just bugger off to bed and leave me up downstairs, because this was in the old days where the family only had one TV, you know, not one in every room like we have
yeah.
now. And it was funny because we had two channels because we were posh in our house. And we watched the Hammer Horror films, and it was funny. There was always an orgy scene. It was usually Ingrid Pitt actually getting her breasts out. There was always an orgy scene or a sex sacrifice scene, whatever, in the middle of it. And my mum always seemed to come down for a glass of water when the orgy scene was on. And she must have thought I was just sat watching porno all night. No, it's been... Honestly, it's just been vampires and murder all night, you know. But
and that's okay, you know.
You know, you're
it's
saying
okay
that kids love jump scares, and that's the scare I love. I absolutely mm-hmm. adore. Yeah, I do. I love that feeling like you're on a roller coaster or something, and you're just like, oh my god, it's getting that. That's my favorite kind of scare, to be honest, is the jump scare. So
well,
does that make me a child?
Why,
is that what you're saying?
And that
it's
works,
why roller coasters are so popular.
Yeah,
and the jump scare works like the roller coaster because it's mm-hmm. both are all about suspense. The mm-hmm. suspense of the roller coaster is that long crawl to the top with the chain clanking underneath you, and you
know exactly
what's going to happen. You know, as soon as they open the door to that haunted house and the killer's inside or the ghost is in, you know he's going to show up. It's suspense that when they do it right, and then the impact is huge, and you can screw it up if you don't know how to do it. But when it's done well, it's fantastic.
I think older I'm getting, the scarier the jump scares are getting for me. Jaws. When I was watching Jaws, I remember cursing, like I was like fuck like three times in a row because I was just, you know, that scared, and I don't mm-hmm. remember. I don't remember going through this before, you know, when I was, like, younger. I mean, I was always scared, and jump scares always scared me. But it does seem like the older I'm getting, the more sensitive I am to it, you know, especially with the buildup of the tense scenes, you know. You're really, like, uh-huh. ripping into it. And, if you don't know, I watched Jaws for the first time, like, a month or so ago because James was threatening to never talk to me again until I watched it.
Well, he should, yeah.
I know.
I did, yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
so ashamed
of herself.
I know.
The head in the boat made you jump, right?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, that was great, though.
That haunted me. That gave me nuts. I saw Jaws when I was about 11, 12. And that gave me nightmares, the head in the boat. That really did. It was
definitely
brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, so Russell, I want to hear more mm-hmm. About the Curse of the Viper King. Do you have a reading for us?
Yeah, I've got one of the chapters in the book just to set it up. Grant is the paleontologist and Jenny Anna is the woman with him, and the two of them have just escaped from the end of the last novel where they were fighting dinosaurs in the Amazon, but they're still lost. So in the second book, they're trying to get home, and they've come across a logging camp, and a guy named Walker is a southerner from the United States, and he's running the logging camp. He put them up for the night, and they hope to get down in the morning. So this is them waking up. So chapter 6. The next morning, Grant sat on the front stoop of their building to give Jenny Anna a little private space for getting clean and dressed. He inspected a pack of freeze-dried something. The label on the outside wasn't in English. He ripped it open. Looking inside did not aid in the identification process. The tan-colored block could have easily been hash brown, some kind of meat, or styrofoam packing material. He took a bite. Based on the flavor, the styrofoam option went to the top of the list. You could put water on that, Jenny Annis said from behind him. I considered it, but I'd add effort, I wouldn't add edibility, so I skipped that step. First thing when we get back to the world, I'm eating a triple cheeseburger. Hey, we're in the jungle, right? Aren't there bananas and stuff growing around? Oh, we can eat native if you wish. We can dig up some roots, maybe a few grubs. She plucked an ant from the edge of the porch and held it in front of Grant. And the jungle's full of protein. Grant chewed the dehydrated block and offered a fake smile. You know, this stuff's starting to grow on me. Walker stepped up to the porch. I got something up your alley, he said. Y'all want to take a peek at a demon? I don't get it, Grant said. Walker smiled. Crew dropped a tree in the western edge of the site yesterday. The roots pulled up, exposed some kind of fossil. Crew thinks it's a demon. Well, lucky for me, a pair of professionals dropped in to set them straight. Y'all up for it? Grant felt the familiar surge of excitement a paleontological discovery always spawned. You bet I am. We are, Jenny Anna corrected. Grant had forgotten that she was supposed to be his assistant. Yeah, we are. Certainly. Team up. Let's go. Grant and Jenny Anna walked Walker across the clear cut. Along a slope at the western edge, one huge mahogany lay on its side, roots ripped out of the ground. A few men stood well away from the tree. The rest lounged in the sleeping area. Walker stopped beside the crown. The nearby men retreated. Rains had loosened up the soil. Damn tree toppled over before we even finished cutting it. Walker headed down to the roots. Jenna turned to Grant, face red with fury. That shows how thin the soil is here, she whispered, and why they shouldn't be logging at all. But they have permits to legally do it, Grant whispered back. Like it or not, it's just stay friends with everybody and get a ride downriver. Grant and Janiano followed Walker to the uprooted base of the tree. An uneven sandstone surface lay exposed. Grant sucked in a deep breath. The fossilized bones of a giant snake protruded from the stone. The skull and a dozen ribs stood out in near perfect articulation. 30-centimeter fangs threatened from the skull a meter and a half long. Behold the demon, Walker said with derision. That cannot be real, Jania said. It certainly can, Grant said. About 58 million years ago, that Titanoboa ruled this area. It grew to a length of almost 13 meters. And that is what this is? No, the boa had a different shaped head. See the curve of this head, the shape of the fangs, the raised scale? This is closer to a pit viper. And the boa lives near water and kills by constriction. This was terrestrial and killed with venom. You did not screw with this snake. Well, I won't be killing anybody now, Walker turned to look at a few workers standing nearby. I need to get these people back to work. You should preserve this fossil, Grant said. It has great scientific value. Trees have a great financial value, Professor. Grant tried a different tack. So does this. A lot of expeditions would pay to excavate it. Pay you, not the lumber company. As soon as we get back to civilization, I can tell the right people. Walker scratched his chin. He looked around the clearing. We could move a touch more south. I'll step this area aside. Grant pointed at the uprooted tree. But after we harvest that. You won't regret it, Grant said. Walker left the two of them and headed over to an idle group of workers. It looks like this could have swallowed a man whole, Jenny Ennis said. The man had been around 58 million years ago. But those creatures are long gone. He bent and traced a finger along a fang. And that's a hell of a good thing. And there you go.
I have a feeling they're not really long gone, personally speaking.
I think there's going to be at least one that might have
awesome.
Made it.
Awesome. I just love giant things. I love creature horror, I must admit. It's probably one of my favorites. But yeah, giant snakes, pretty awesome. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
When I'm creating one of these these giant animals. I try to look up real creatures, like there's giant spiders in here. So
oh,
I said, all right, well,
oh,
let me
God.
Make sure that there's something realistic about it. So I find out that there are actual live spiders that are generally terrestrial. They spin webs on the ground. They spit webs across like Spider-Man. They actually do it like that. And they're venomous. And I'm looking at pictures of these thinking, oh, I can, that's perfect. That's it. That's the monster. Maybe 30 times bigger, but yes, exactly like that. So,
yeah.
And at the end of each of the books and the afterword, I put that in for the people that have read it who might be saying, oh, that's crazy. No, that's not crazy.
Wow.
Because here are real life examples of each of the monsters you just saw. Some of that stuff happens every day on a much smaller scale. So,
oh yeah,
that's a lot of fun.
I'll at the end of the show, I have to make sure I get your address. I'll send you a copy of my novel, Peed, which is Giant Centipedes, which I think you would really enjoy it. I mean, it's not quite PG-13, but. And it, like you said, I mean, everybody who's listened to the show before, I'm actually a zoologist. I have a degree in zoology from many, many moons ago. So, it's my thing. Hence, I love creature horror. But like
you say,
the giant centipedes, I mean, the regular ones in the book are based on fact, on the Peruvian yellow-legged centipede, which grow to well over 12, 13 inches long. And then I had some bigger ones. In prehistoric times, they used to grow to about a meter long, so about 3 feet long.
Okay.
So I had some that big. And then I had one in the book that was like the size of a school bus, you know, just really, let's just go for this.
Nice.
Which, again, even as a zoologist, is a bit of a stretch because it's not physically possible because of the physiology, but hey, this is fiction, people.
Right.
Snakes. But, I mean, I love. We have snakes here. I have a boa constrictor and a python. So we need to trade books.
By you knowing the actual zoology, what that does is it keeps you from creating something ridiculous like Mothra. And by having to force yourself to keep it a little realistic, you end up writing, I think, a better story. Because you have to be much more creative to keep this monster believable.
Yeah.
So your background actually is great to make that happen.
Oh, it worked really well. But it's like you say, with your the spider thing, the spiders, it's the... It's like the centipedes. I did as far as the venom and everything. I didn't have to make any of that. Was all true. The fact that they actually exude venom from the tips of their feet, so they can actually inject you with venom, just walking across your skin. Just things like that, and what the venom has in it, what the venom can do, to a human with a bite. You exaggerate it a little bit, but everything was all about. I mean, I did a bit. I knew a fair bit of it, but I did some research on the biochemistry behind the venom, and it's the sort of. I mean, it has the enzyme. It's like a lot of snakes, where it has nerve toxins. It has enzymes, so it starts digesting you from the inside out, as with some of the snakes, because it makes it easier to digest when they eat you. And so all the physiology of the venom was accurate. It was all zoologically accurate, So just. But
yeah,
I say, in nature, exactly. But like you say, but in nature, nature is vicious. Nature does not mess about. If it's going to kill you, by Christ, it's going to kill you.
It's worked. Most definitely.
Oh, so Russell, I was wondering if you would be so kind as to do 11 questions with me. I mean, I would ask you about our embarrassing story segment, but, you know, I did not prepare you earlier. And, you know,
okay.
I have a lot of fun at 11 questions. So just say yes, and we'll just get on with it.
Okay, let's just say yes. Sure.
Yes.
Yay.
Good, man. I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
And right. Now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, what is your best or worst movie you ever saw?
Oh, the worst, you know, worst. What? Oh, I walked out of The Doors.
Yeah, really?
I was watching, yes, that was the
wow.
one with Val Kilmer in it. And
yep.
I looked at my wife, and she looked at me. I said, do you know what's going on? And she said, I have no idea, and that was it.
Wow. Okay.
It was a bit trippy. I did sit through it because I'm interested in that sort of thing. But, yeah, it was very trippy. Yeah.
And I was really looking
forward to it. They could have done better.
But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the very first grown-up horror novel that you read?
It was a Stephen King, I think it was Carrie. It was definitely a Stephen King book. And that hooked me on him.
I am going to have to start taking a poll because I swear almost everybody we have on, it's a Stephen King novel. And it was for
yeah.
me as well. Pet Sematary was the very first one. So
it wasn't for me. Haha, it was James Herbert for me. And that was, he predated King by a good few years, actually.
Right?
The Rat.
Rats.
Yep.
I think
a lot
of it.
Yeah.
Because King it was so available. He was
such a
big seller. Everybody had the books around. They would use bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was and the libraries carried all of it. So one way or another, you could get a hold of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite cuss word?
Oh, well, we're on, like, that I personally use or
Either or.
Well, I guess shit works pretty much in a lot of different creative ways. So it can be angry, it can be happy, it can, you know, it can, it's flexible.
That's a good one. Okay. What's the worst way you can imagine yourself dying?
Drowning. Totally terrifies me. That is my biggest fear. I mean, burning to death would be worse, but drowning terrifies me.
Mm. Yeah, both of those are pretty high up there, you know, for me. Definitely burning. What was your very first pet?
I grew up and we always had cats. So we were a cat family growing up.
Awesome. Nothing wrong with cats. You know, they're not quite as friendly, I don't think, as dogs, but they're super cool. Yeah.
And they're a little more independent.
Yeah,
so they don't
definitely.
Require as much care. A dog needs loving attention.
Constant.
All the time.
Yes, definitely.
But they
give
loving attention all the time, so it works out, you know.
It does.
Yeah.
Who is your biggest influence, either in writing or just in life generally?
I would definitely say it was my father, and in life in general. He did a very good job instilling a fundamental moral code about being fair and being honest. And it served him really well, and it has definitely served me well.
That's a great answer. If you were God for a day, what would you do?
Wow. I was God for a day. One day. I think I'd very selfishly amass a really good car collection. Now, that's not a great way to be God, but I've only got it for a day, you know?
Right,
so.
Right.
No, that's great. I mean, why not abuse it? I would definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome. I don't think I've heard an answer quite like that. That's good.
That's probably the best one we've had, yeah.
Yeah.
But at least the most honest one.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Who or what, in your opinion, is the crappiest horror or supernatural being?
Let's see. You know, I was never impressed with the Greek gods.
Yeah.
They just didn't do much for me. I thought they were really petty. And, I mean, they didn't even amass a car collection with all their powers. But
yeah, so they were rubbish. Like, rubbish.
Yeah. And they were treated people terribly.
Okay, and for some reason, whenever I ask this question to one of our horror writers, I'm a little, you know, nervous about it. If it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
Oh, no.
No, good.
No. And I can tell you, I was in the military, and part of my job was, one of my jobs that I had while I was there, I did work after a major aviation accident, and people died, people burned to death in that, and there is the smell of human flesh burned is repulsive. I mean, it's inherently repulsive to us for a reason.
Well, see, now I think I'm a little more even scared now by that answer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have some guys come on and they're like, well, yeah, give me some ketchup or, you know, whatever they say. And
no.
That makes me squeamish. But I think your answer made me a little more squeamish. So thank you for that.
But it's odd because it actually is a sweet smell. It's very strange.
Yeah?
It's a sweet smell, but it's repulsive. And there's no way. You get close to it, there's no way you're interested in eating that.
Yow. Ooh, okay. Moving right along.
There you go.
Who is your favorite member of the British royal family?
I like Prince Harry.
He's the favorite, of course,
And because I was a helicopter pilot in the Army, and he's a helicopter pilot, and I like his attitude. He seems down to earth, and I think his choice in who he was going to marry was proof of that.
Yeah. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've been impressed.
So which franchise is your favorite, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
I got to give Friday the 13th some credit for longevity. Saw was a little brutal.
Right, it was. It was.
You know, and then Friday the 13th, not all of them are as good as the one next to them, but you have to give them credit for doing something different.
Awesome. That's a good answer. That is. I'm a Halloween girl myself. Love Michael Myers. You know, he's definitely it for me. But Friday 13th probably is a good second. I do think that.
Yep.
What is your least favorite part of the writing process?
Getting started.
Really?
Sitting down and actually getting the typing going is very difficult, but once you get it and you get it flowing, it's a lot of fun. But something about it's like work. It's like there's a big pile of dirt in the backyard and you have to fill a hole with it, and you say, oh, man, I don't want to do this. I like doing it. I love working outside. It's fun, but just getting started getting started with the writing is the hardest part of the day, and then the rest of it's much better.
That is first time I heard that answer, but it definitely makes sense. It's a good one. And here's our bonus question, and it's basically just for me. And because I couldn't actually talk about baseball today, and I was going to. I had so much to talk about, but then we had that mess up, and it never happened. So, baseball or stamp collection?
Fans of both, believe it or not, but baseball. I definitely I'd like to watch a baseball game because you sit outside and it's summertime and the field's beautiful and I like baseball's fun.
Who's your team? Do you have a team?
I grew up hating the Yankees because I was in New York, but I was an Oakland A's fan because that's where I was born, and my grandfather was a huge fan, and when we would visit, he would take us to see the Oakland A's. So that makes that a sentimental favorite.
I actually don't know too much about them. I'm an American League East girl, you know, Toronto Blue Jays all the way, even though I'm not, you know, I don't live in Canada. They're still my, they're still my team, and, but I, you know, yay, they're not going to make it to the playoffs, but I'm still excited about the playoffs. I think I'll follow the Red Sox, you know. That's just because I, you know, the Yankees, you know, so I have to do something else. Exactly. But,
yeah, there's definitely generations of people who will always hate the Yankees for whatever reason.
Yes, right. And, you know, I grew up in New York, but still, no, just say no. So, I hate to say that we are about out of time, but I thank you for coming back on the show.
My pleasure. It's always a good time.
You have to promise to come back. You're going to come back, right?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a thriller coming out from Flame Tree Press in February, and it's called The Playing Card Killer, and it's a serial killer thriller with some
fantastic
horror thrown in. I'll be happy to come back, and we can talk about that.
Awesome.
That'd be great. We love serial killers. We do love our serial killers on the show.
Oh, who does it?
Always good.
Right? And I will get your links put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, then go and do that there. Again, I want to thank
you
so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to have you back.
All right. My pleasure. Folks, have a great evening.
Thank you.
And you. Thank you so much. Absolute pleasure, sir. We'll speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And time has beaten us yet again. It is, I'm afraid, it is that time we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
It's a real rockin' rhythm.